And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello. All right. This is what we're going to do today. We're going to go ahead and just kind of catch up on some stuff. We haven't had an opportunity to talk about a lot of things. And so we're not going to do anything but, you know, some news stuff and get caught up and say, yo, what's up? Can I do phone calls today? 602-264-2800. You know, I need to know. Donna, is the 264-2800 number working? Go ahead and try that and make sure. Because we had, what? 2645. So that one won't rotate over? Okay, test it and see if it rotates over into the other one. No, but try, okay. Try calling from your cell phone, the 2800 number, see if it rotates over. See, we had when we had the power outage a few days ago, all of a sudden one of the phone lines didn't work. But the main phone line, I just want to make sure that you can call that and it'll go in, because that's the line that's not working, but it rotates over into the second line. And I just want to see, does it? No? No? All right. 264-5111. 5111 602-264-5111. I will entertain calls today. You know, let's do that. You know, I tell you the reason why we don't. Donna usually screens out the calls because we have guests all the time. And whenever you have callers, you know, they call in, they want to talk about what they want to talk about, and kind of, oh, I talk about what I want to talk about. It just takes off on tangents. And a lot of times, you know, I do an in-depth interview. A lot of times you don't do a whole hour. When I was doing radio here and everything, you know, and then they get one segment or it's a half hour or something like that, you know, or, you know, it just didn't go that long. And I found when I first started, I did 2 hours on one subject. Now, a lot of times it wasn't the same person, but we'd always, because we thought when we first started doing radio back in February of 2003, keep in mind the times. Now, one, there was another openly libertarian on the air in the major media market. That just didn't, I don't know how the heck that happened. But there was no way that you were going to get all of the stuff that we wanted to talk about any other way. This is what we did. Had a morning show. You had breaks. We had to go to, you know, traffic and weather and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, get the tax slaves to work, you know. Danny Sullivan is get the tax slaves to work. You know, how's the traffic out there? Blah, 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 blah. And so what we did is we had 13 weeks. And that was the first original contract. And we didn't think that we were going to be doing any more radio after that. We were, like, shocked we got the invitation to that one. And so we're going, okay, 13 weeks. We'll see. But we're going to do 13 weeks. We can do what we want to do. 5 times 13 is, like, you know, like a lot. All right? So we said, all right, we got so many days. So it was 2 hours a day, 7 to 9, I think, in the morning, or 6 to 8, I think it was, yeah, whatever. So what happened was, is we go, all right, we're going to do a subject, you know, controversial, and give the libertarian spiel on the war. Oh, we're going to do, man, we're definitely going to cover this war thing. All right, so we did that. And abortion. Oh, man, that's always coming up. You almost libertarian thing on abortion. You know, we got pro-life libertarians for life. We got, you know, pro-choice. We got, you know, let's talk about Uncle Sam in the womb. You know, let's go, let's do the government thing there. Then we talk about, you know, civil disobedience, you know, religion. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And it would be 2 hours on one subject. So that way we weren't misunderstood. There was no way that people could misunderstand what we were about and why. So that got popular and, you know, asked to stay again, another contract, and then another station picked up contract, and then they actually, you know, started, like, you know, like getting paid some money, you know. And that, it kind of evolved from there, but I never stopped the activism. Because to have something to talk about, you know, a lot of guys go, I want to express my opinion, you know, okay. Well, the mic's open. Well, express it. That's it. That's all you got to say. You know, so you see my point? I mean, a lot of times it's not as easy as you think. They have no dead air on my show. You know, so so we tried to encourage the activists to do radio when we had the station at the workshop. I mean, well, absolutely. No excuses. I mean, it's top of the line, all the connection goodies and whiz bangs. The only thing that I could, you know, I could probably, the microphone. You know, I tried a couple other microphones and 15 gazillion. It's just I'm so loud. You know what I use? They're called, I got different ones, but the one that I use, they're drum mics. You know, it's the microphones that go in front of the bass drums and everything. Because that's what I am. I'm a big bass drum for liberty. You know, it's the only thing that will work with my voice, you know, that's just not, you know, it doesn't hurt. Okay. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why we do this. But the, I was hoping to be an inspiration, you know, because I could see that that's what was taken from us, you know, it was just the inspiration. Young minds are so creative, and I see it beaten out of them and out of our culture. It was, I give you a good example. How would a 10-year-old dispatch a zombie? I mean, what were some of the things that they would do? How would it be creative thing? I don't know. You know, read Davy Barker's books, okay? And he's decided he's going to do this. He's going to write the book. Liberty Forum, you know, last year, he's going to, I need to write zombie, but he's on the plane. There's a teacher sitting next to him, a 10-year-old's writing about how, you know, to take out zombies as a writing project. How serendipitous is that? So he's like, you know, give me that, and he puts it in his book. How much more creative can you be on something like that than a 10-year-old? I mean, you probably come up with stuff and everything, but there's, you know, out of the mouths of babes. I mean, you know, only things kids can, from a totally different perspective. And, you know, and that's not encouraged anymore. If it ever was, I don't know. But, I sure as heck, you know, thought I had a lot to contribute when I was younger. And then you get locked in, you know. And it really does happen. I remember, you know, kind of you have these feelings and your thoughts and you kind of and everything. And then the hormones start coming in. And you get yourself an opinion, and it starts to solidify, and you start to categorize people, and you start to call BS on stuff. You go, you know what? That guy, I call BS on that guy. I call BS on this issue. I call BS on this institution. I call BS, 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 BS. And I don't even remember really having anything positive, you know, to think of the world, you know, certain times during the testosterone rush. I mean, it's just like, you know, you know, me, 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 me. So I'm a big believer in, you know, that's why they do junior high. You know, that's why the government, anyone gets you out, Hitler Youth kind of thing. You know, there's, we're going to challenge the man, and it's, you know, it's mom and dad at home. You know, it's never the institution or us or whatever. We're, you know, baby seal savers. So this is, I think I got time today. I'm going to go ahead and try and tell you all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes and where we're going and what we're developing. You know, I might even show you some stuff. Oh, we come back. I show you my latest experiment on my nickel iron battery stuff. Yeah, I never stopped on that, but I'm starting to refine some stuff. We're getting to another level of experimentation here. You know, I'll show you some of the lab stuff.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No road ads if I can help it. Get my Jetson car, Jetson car, Jetson car, Jetson car. Okay, I'm going to describe for you on air my battery blah 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 here again and show you some pictures from the lab. All right, I give you what for. All right, now I'm going to describe it so that the radio audience gets something out of this, and those of you watching video, you'll kind of, you know, get the gist. At about 5-6 inches high, about 5 inches high, there is a 1-inch square, like a column, like a cylinder, but it's square and it's hollow in the middle, and they are called kiln posts. These are the dense ceramic, high temperature, it doesn't melt things that you put your pottery on when you fire it in a kiln. Okay, so if you're having, you got a friend that does pottery and they put it in there and it's umpteen gazillion degrees and it's glowing clay, kind of red hot, whatever. You know, it's got a, it's sitting there on something, okay? And they're called kiln posts, and they're made of ceramic. Now, the reason I use these is they make good elements for anodes and cathodes and whatever in batteries. And, well, no, I guess they don't because they're not conductive. But, I mean, they're for what I want to do. Now, what they are is you can see it over on, there's the top of a battery post, one of the batteries. I have one of these that's hooked up, and it just, I'm going to do it better and different. But anyway, this 5-6 inch long cylinder. It's about a square inch. It's like a cylinder. And I go ahead and I take and I put what's called a catalyst on there. That's what's in this. Now, there's a whole bunch of, mixing and doing and chemistry. And, it primarily comes down to a nickel, cobalt, and iron solution that's mixed in various combination. I mean, and then when I take an iron precipitate, from a rust. I mean, you're rusting is what you're doing, And you take the rust and you put it in with nickel and cobalt that's been in solution, atomized, I guess, I take a nickel, a 0.9999 nickel, from Canada, okay? So I take a Canadian nickel and I put it in the hydrochloric solution, and sooner or later the solution turns green. I mean, it's really beautiful emerald green. I really like that green. That's a nice green. And you add cobalt powder and so on, and you kind of, mix those together. And really, there's different combinations, different things. I tried a whole bunch of different combinations on sample slides, but let me tell you what the deal is. To get the carbon nanotubes to start growing in a column, like a little, cylinder, you need to get it start. Once it starts, though, man, it's off and running, and the carbon just kind of assembles itself. It's building a diamond or whatever. But to get it started, you need a catalyst. And these catalysts take the form of different small particles of metals. And if you get it just right, all of a sudden it'll start growing, and then boom, you get the right kind at the root, at the foundation of the carbon structure, and then all of a sudden, it just keeps adding carbon atoms if you can supply it in a steady stream, in a steady way, under the correct temperatures and the conditions and the atmosphere, blah, 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 okay, and that, this is what happens. If I am able, and I'll show you here in a little bit, if I'm able to take like acetylene is the gas when you have two tank torching, all right? Gas welding, gas torching, blowtorch, whatever you want to call it. And then I just call it acetylene torch. But, what it is when you see guys, they're in the welding and movies and whatever, in shops and on Discovery Channel, and they turn on a valve on a handheld torch, and they take a little sparker thing, and they go, poof, and they have a flame. Then they turn up another valve, which is the oxygen, that, gives you the real super hot at the tip, itty-bitty flame, cut through about everything flame. When you first start the acetylene, it poofs into existence. You got a nice flame there. It creates this black soot. What it is, C2H2. You're having carbon and hydrogen, a form of a hydrocarbon. Acetylene is a hydrocarbon, like a methane is a hydrocarbon, like gasoline is a hydrocarbon. I mean, you know, you have hydrogen and carbon and various different chains and add heat, fire, and, you know, like crap burns, okay? Well, it doesn't burn completely. What it does is it's burning off the hydrogen. And then you add the oxygen, you got a little rocket, you know, at the end of the tip of your, you know, torch. So you got, you know, rocket engineered, you know, burning stuff. And my explanation. So that black soot that is created. Now, you could use lamp black. I remember that being a thing, lamp black. Sometimes they'd use that as, you know, not very permanent ink. But, you know, you get black. So I remember an old movie, you know, Daniel Boone show or something where they have a revolutionary thing. You got Benjamin Franklin using lamp black, you know, to print, counterfeit British pounds or some crap like that. So anyway, it was a TV show. But you can use that black is what I need. But I need it in single carbon atoms. If I can get the heat right in an inert gas atmosphere of argon or helium works a lot better, and I go ahead and I put those gases in the right combination inside a tube. Imagine a test tube in a toaster. Okay, that's not a bad idea. Okay, I'll give you an idea. You put a test tube in a toaster. Now you have the test tube open on both sides. Now imagine you could, you know, lay the test tube or a loop in the toaster and you got both ends open. On one end, you're putting in acetylene and helium. And helium, I'm not really sure. I guess the helium kind of suspends the carbon particles in a way in an inert gas field so that it doesn't react with it, because that's what an inert gas is. If I have an inert gas, a medium for these little bitty carbon particles, you know, atoms to be floating around in, you need something for them to float around in. It might as well be, you know, helium or argon. Especially helium works because it doesn't react with it. It doesn't make a, you know, helium carbon atom. So that's why it's inert. It doesn't, you know, react with stuff. So I got this gas field of the helium, and it's kind of floating around in there. Da, 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 da. I got carbon atoms floating around in helium. Now I add heat, okay? There's no, it's dry, it's a sealed tube, but there's heat. And it's very hot, and you get it up, you know, at least 750 around in there degrees Celsius, which is, I don't know, a lot. It's like 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So you go, okay, so I got that going on, and it starts to steadily break the hydrogen from the carbon. Then if I got the right catalyst and the right substrate and the right surface, you know, then I can get those carbon atoms to assemble on that surface, and it's very conductive. More so than copper. And if you get it just right, it always gets to where it's superconductive. So that conductivity I can test with a multimeter, you know, a voltage or conductivity meter, and you flip the dial, flip, 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 and I put it on there. Ooh, this ceramic that won't conduct any electricity now conducts a lot of electricity. So I got a big black tower. Now, when we come back, I'll show you what that ceramic kiln post looks like when it is carbonized. And it's like a black velvet, and it's all fluffy. And what might I do with that? Why would I do that? Why would I want to have carbon nanotubes or whatever I'm making, carbon, all spongy, lots of surface area? Why? Talk about it when we come back.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Good morning. And just showing some of the dome pictures we're getting ready to do the full installation Wednesday. We keep, you know, piddling. We got a lot of fingers in the fire on that one, you know, the two different aquaponics companies and the dome, and we want to make sure that it, you know, we can, it looks good on video, and we got coverage and everything, and I got to build like a little kitchen and put and kind of. I think what I'm going to do, one of them, it looks like the way we're laying it out and plumbing it, we have two domes put together. They get one, do whatever you want. Now I have some verticals that hang in there, and we're designed. I just got my McMaster car, man. I tell you, that place rocks. It's like a candy. It's like a Harbor Freight online for everything. All nuts, bolts, pipe and fitting, threaded this, that. Whiz-bang and gizmos and gadgets. I mean, it's just, you know, enormous catalog, and I'm like, wow, this thing is damn. I mean, nuclear industry uses it, so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I can do it. So it's kind of like Grangers or anything you know about Grangers and such, and they come out of, they have a lot of distribution centers around the country, and one of them is in L.A., big warehouses. And I order it, and it's there the next day. And the more I order it in the evening, I get it like 9:10 this morning. I mean, it's just amazing. They just, the overnight kind of Federal Express and UPS and whatever the heck it is, I get it. And I go, and yeah, baby. All right. You know, so this is, and I made a mistake and ordered the wrong screw. I got whatever anyway, so I just ordered another one, you know, not use the other ones, I'm sure. So what we're going to go ahead and do is I'll go ahead and start detailing a lot of this, and we have the capacity on the site, the blogging and so on, but there's, and I'll show you later today some of the new formatting of Freedom's Phoenix. I'll give you a sneak peek. You guys are the first to see it, and we've been working on this for months, and we're going to be working on it for months, and it's probably not going to be until our festival thing in October that we do the release on it, and we may even wait until January. I'm not going to rush this, and I haven't been saying anything about it to you guys because, you know, I mean, it takes time. We are now in the first, well, probably the second or third major overhaul of the appearance of the site. Now, the features will stay the same. You know, a lot of this, it's just kind of how it looks and, you know, the way the site works and, you know, from a visual standpoint. But it's going to have, you know, all the same features because, heck, that's why I built it this way, is do stuff I want to do. Those of you that really want to see, you know, the power of the site, go to the tutorial. Now, that tutorial is kind of dated. It's probably at least over 2 years old. But it'll give you an idea of just about everything. It's on pretty much from the format that we have now, because we're going into a new phase, and we're going to start stitching all of the projects that we're doing together into one single focus thing. Larkin Rose and Tim Fry and I have been working together here of late to create the first videos that will, Larkin says he's going to be done by this weekend. And he had a little bit of a budget. He wanted to pay somebody to do some secret stuff on the video and kind of help and what, I don't care. Here, you know, knock yourself out. So Tim and I helping him with that. And when this comes out, it won't be a secret. I mean, this project, or the defending Archimedes thing, you have no idea. You know, I tell you what, I'll get back to the lab here in a second, but I tell you, you know, the one thing that people, they don't have enough faith in Generation Next. I always did. I was them. I mean, I remember the, you know, seriously, you know, and what takes that indignation out of us? What is it that, you know, I guess we just accept and it'll never get better. It'll never, man, there's a, am I immune or something? Am I eating the right thing? Am I, you know, licking the right rock or something? I mean, is it really that simple? Is it I got the right wife, family? You know, is it a gene thing? Is that, well, I bet you the man wants to find out. You damn Skippy. Whole bunch of, you know, people out there, you damn voluntarist, leave me aloneist, out there going, just not buying the program. If there was a gene, so what do we hear? Obama, executive order, everybody must get tested for HIV, for AIDS, get blood sample. They stick a needle in the arm. That's the only thing missing. Facial recognition. Heck, they may even, you know, I don't know what they don't have, but they sure as heck want a regimented you show up and give us your DNA sample. I can guarantee you that. You know, because they're already talking about it in Great Britain. They need to preempt, you know, bad behavior. And what is determined as bad behavior? I bet you it's going to be, dissatisfaction with they, them, those. I bet you that. I'm okay. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and assume the planet's going to keep spinning, and we're not going to wait. We're just going to, you know, we're just going to free ourselves. You know, I really encourage, I've already watched it, you know, again, the presentation that I gave at Pork Fest. And I had a few speeches there, but, you know, it was the main one, and it was food, fish, fuel, and freedom kind of thing. I mean, you know, I'm just like, look, you know, can we just free ourselves? Like, oh, let me see. I just did. Now, done. What did you think was going to happen? You're going to get a free slave slip or something? You know, a free slave slip. Yeah, you're looking for your free slave slip from the Massa. Can I have a free slave slip? You know, that'd be another one. Yeah, shiny badges, you know, and free slave slip. Free slave slip. Say that three times. Okay, so I'm just going, you know, is that what you're waiting for? You're not getting it, okay? They don't issue those. You know, and the thing is that you already show your slave by even, you know, freaking asking to get one issued. Can I have a free slave slip, please? You know, and, well, I need a free slave slip from the state to, you know, free me, you know, from the federal government, you know, with my free slave slip. And I'm going, yeah, how's that going to work out, too? You know, this 9th, 10th Amendment thing. We're asserting our rights by recognizing that they gave us this right to assert it, you know, through the, you know, the slave master that's more local kind of mean. It's the whole attitude. And you can see it's like a game they play with you. All right. We'll continue talking about. Okay, for this minute, real quick, let's go ahead and go to the lab. All right. Here you have the Killam Post, and it's all about the catalyst, okay? Now, see, you see here these little disposable brushes that I think it's a brush kit that came with cleaning auto spray guns, you know, paint guns and so on. You got to clean them. They have all these little brushes, and I just accumulated a bunch of them because they were cheap and so on. But you got to keep in mind when you're working a lot of these different chemicals is that even the stainless steel, the steel that, you know, makes up the brush, if it touches it, it'll contaminate. You know, so I got to be careful. The brush is at the end of this and so on. I mean, it's just little stuff like I'm not so worried about that. It's not that I don't recognize it. You know, you're looking for accidents. You want stuff to happen. You want to go, ooh, why did that one work and that, you know, but you want to keep track of stuff. So I photograph a lot of things and I keep little notes in a book and so on. I don't want to come across something major and not have any freaking idea. So, you know, I pay a little bit of attention, but I don't get all anal worked up about it because a lot of times, a lot of my discoveries is found just from original discovery. And you go, why the heck did that happen? And you learn something. And I've learned a lot. So I don't seem so stupid. Everybody's yelling at me. I don't put up YouTubes of every single thing while I'm doing this. But I've now done it enough times and gone through to know kind of what works that I can follow an experiment from the beginning to end and kind of share it with you. And what I'm doing here is I've mixed, and I'll show you here in a little bit, I've mixed the iron precipitate. That it's just, you know, in solution, it precipitates out, you know, and you get whatever. Anyway, you have rust, okay, iron rust. So I have the rust that goes in with the nickel and the cobalt to create these itty-bitty particles of metal that the individual carbon atoms can start to construct on. So I go, all right, so that's why I do that. And that dries, and it's real porous, and you kind of, you know, get the little metal particles in there. Now here you see I'm putting it into the tube. Now I have I have test sizes that are about half the diameter of this. This is the larger one to take. You know, I'm doing a real production here. So I take and I put that kiln post, that cylinder, that square cylinder, into the horizontal glass tube that's going into a toaster, and it's going to glow red. That thing's going to get hot. And anything but, you know, like a metal atom is going to burn off anyway. All the moisture and everything. And I'll show you what happens and the experiment that we just did yesterday.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you.
In the endless food systems. Endlessfoodsystems.com. We're going to start giving them a lot of props. You know, they're working with us out there. Oh, there's my two dogs. You see my, you know, killer dogs, my little toy poodle. You know, if they come, you know, and they take out the dog, all right? You know, seriously? You know, bang, well, the dog, it was coming right for you. That's what it was, a little toy poodle. You know, I'm like, you know, they're good doorbells as far as I'm concerned. They don't piss me off too much, you know? And that is, I'm like, whatever. But the thing is that, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, my next dog, I retire, I get out, I'm get older or whatever. I'd like to get me, like, you know, like a dog. You know, I've always had, you know, medium-sized dogs and so on, and, you know, they're good friends. But I don't have time to give them the attention that they need. But fortunately, we have a lot of people come by, and they know our dogs. You know, Harvey and Hannah. You know, it's a long story. But anyway, so I'm, you know, endlessfoodsystems.com. And we're getting, you know, help from another gentleman, too, that's in aquaponics. They just really want, they invest a lot of money. I mean, it's going to be hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You know, of course, I do mine, too, but... You know, the thing is, we really want this system to work. And I'm going to show you later an aquaponics system, a friend of mine. They call them IBTs, I think, International Bulk Transport. So it's those big white caged poly water barrel things. You know, you see them on the side of road construction sites and whatever. They're just putting water in different places, and they're just like in a steel cage. And it has these square poly things that they put water in. Well, what he's done is they cut the bottom and the top off of, they get three of them, and they cut the bottom and top off of two of them. So they got four, like, foot high grow beds, and then they got one that's a tank for the fish. And he inherited it from a friend of his that was moving, just gave it to him, and he got that sucker going. I mean, he's already started some of the plants and everything for us so that we're not losing time as we, you know, build Aquadome. And so I just give you, you know, a shot of that, you know, so you can kind of see we're working on. It looks like Tuesday, because I'm so busy. There's so much stuff. All of us, we're doing this in our spare time when we can, and we want to make this work. And I'm not slave driving them because they're busy and it's hot. It's 100 freaking billion degrees out there. Hey, come over here and work for free for me, you know. So we're getting stuff done. And I do whatever they tell me. They just... You know, not sure how they want it. It's an aquadome. You know, who's last time set up a system for a dome? So we're going to be building a lot of stuff. We're just so busy. And with the Jackalope Freedom Festival coming up, you know, this afternoon we leave for that. And they're already got the man up there. Oh, I got to tell you about this. Alma and well, I don't even want to give out names, okay? We're all Alma. You know, I am Spartacus, okay? So they want to talk to me. They've gone up there 2 days in a row looking for me. And he's got, are you here for the Jackalope Freedom? The what? Jackfest? God, man, that sounds weird, like Porkfest. Yeah, we got weird names. Okay, so there you go. JFF, the Jackalope Freedom Festival. Nope, never heard of it. Don't know what you're talking about. Hey, well, what are you going to do? Oh, we just want to help. We just want to be, and we kind of, and they come up the next day. Whoop, you know anybody? Now, as they're doing this, Alma says she has a paper mache about, I don't know, it's like 18 inches high, a jackalope that she made. You know, it's a rabbit with, you know, antlers. You know, it's a fictitious. What happens when you're traveling around in the Southwest, certainly in the tourist traps and everything, I always have these big jackrabbits with antelope, you know, kind of antlers, you know, taxidermied in, and they call it the jackalope. It doesn't exist, okay? It's right. His roommate's a snipe, you know? I mean, it's just, they just, whatever. So it's a jackalope. It's kind of indigenous, you know, to Arizona, and I guess, you know, like New Mexico kind of thing, but it's Southwestern thing. And, they go, yep, the jackalope. We're looking for the jackalope. He's over there. So, and there he's sitting at Alma's camp in a chair. They don't want to talk to her. You know, they want to talk to me. Why? Well, I know why. You know, they want to, oh, we're the good guys. Hey, we're doing a bunch of overtime, have a bunch of people up here. We just want, you know, pace. You know, it'd be pace. You know, I'm like, right, whatever. You know, we'll see. But then, you know, they said something. Well, we just don't want, you know, people to be riding the ATV out in the meadow and you doing, you know, kind of, we're just, you know, we're here to regulate your behavior in some way, regulate. And I'm thinking, I'm going, yeah, they got a new thing. You must license plate your ATV vehicles. Now, the way the law reads is if you're on any of the government roads, all right? Now, Baca Meadow is a campsite. The whole thing's a site. Are those trails in there that go around the campsite, are those roads? This can be debated, okay? They go, yeah, guilty. $300 fine, okay, for having a motorcycle ATV without not only having it, a license plate put on your off-road vehicle, on your, you know, quad, and like, I have a license plate. You have to have an off-road sticker. There's a decal. It goes, I don't even know how much a decal is, Donna. You know, we did it. We went because I knew it was $300, and I'm, you know, whatever. I would challenge it. I call them. They haven't called me back. I just want to know, how are you enforcing this? And what if I have it on my trailer? I don't even take it off the trailer. I'm going to go somewhere else with it. Do I get ticketed for it? I take it off the trailer, sitting in my campsite. Do I get ticketed for it? Do I have to have motor running? Do I get ticketed for it? You see, you know, are these the games that we want to play? You know, sometimes, yeah, whatever. I'm just, you know, I'm not. Because because I can see what's going on. It's a revenue thing. It's always a revenue thing. If they can't get the, I don't know, whatever permit, I didn't ask how much, don't care. You know, if it even free, I don't even know, I don't care. For their 70-person thing. Well, then they're going to go, all right, fine. You want to play? I know how they work, how they think. They'll be up looking for things to ticket. All right, fine. You got a bunch of freedom people here. Let's go ahead and see how much we can make out of you. It's $300 every time you have somebody with a vehicle that doesn't have a license plate. So I'm just for, you know, biggest thing is not giving them money, okay? So then they'll go, all right, well, you did this wrong and this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. We'll document and videotape every, you know, whatever. Or they could just be nice. But if not this time, it'll be next time, or it grows and gets bigger, and it may be the time after that time. Sooner or later, it's like Burning Man. Here they come. And they did that. Somebody was telling me about what they did with Burning Man, is that they go, all right, you exceeded your permit by X many tens or hundreds of thousands, and the fines are $5 billion to $1 trillion, or you capitulate to this and the idea of that and the fine and the fees, and we get and make money to kind of whatever it is. Out in the middle of the freaking Death Valley. I mean, you know, that seriously. So I'm going, okay, that's how they want to play. So we'll go ahead and document this. And we just want to be peaceful. We learn something. We just really just want to be left alone. And Donna and I are really looking forward to going up because we've been busy this summer. I mean, it's just, you know, all the things that we're working on and trying to fit a bunch of little things. And we have magazine due tonight. So we're up late, you know, working on it. So it looks like we're going to be okay. I need to finish my article. I'm just going to do kind of a quick thing with a lot of pictures. And the speech that I gave at Porkfest pretty much sums it up right there. I mean, just like, you know, I'm just going to, we embed it into the digital magazine. You watch it and do it in peace. So I'm just going, yeah, that what that guy said. So we'll go ahead and do that. It'll save me a lot of time. But I still wanted to show some photos of the last month or two. And we're building up to a big, it keeps getting pushed off. It's got pushed off probably 3 months later than what I anticipated because the Defending Archimedes project is getting a lot bigger than I thought it would initially. So we're going, whoa, we're just going to hold off. We're not going to rush it. We're just going to go ahead and just keep building and getting, you know, we want to do a proper launch on this thing because I'm starting to see that a lot of other people are starting to see what I see. You know, the vision on this is, you know, it's just, you know, that's, you're not going to beat, you know, this statism thing with, you know, any particular thing. It's going to be a movement. It's going to be an understanding. It's going to be a freeing of your mind. It's going to be, you know, saving of the asses. You know what I mean? So we're working on that. Now, dang it, we just keep running out of time. Now, I got all day today. You know, don't worry about it. We'll get to all the stuff that I want to show. There's a lot of pictures, a lot of things. We'll get to the lab thing. I guarantee it. Then we've got some news stuff to do. And then, but I got to talk about the jackalope. They're up there now doing, calling in Ernie. They're waiting. For what? You know, I get there and I say, yeah, hi. You know, I'm going camp. Wow, there's a lot of people camping here. You know these guys? I go, well, I'll get to know them. Ask me tomorrow. I'll tell you, they'll all be my new friends. I mean, semantics. It's just a game that they play. It's so freaking weird. But, you know, overtime, lots of overtime. Got nothing else to do. We are excitement for the government up there. The bureaucracy. We are relevant, you know, so we're whatever. Now, let's go pace, man. You know, maybe we'll get some classes out of them. You know, we're hoping to get some topographical and compass reading, kind of doing one of the classes they have. You come on down, you're going to show us. That'd be fine. So, whatever. So we'll go ahead and when we come back the next hour, I'll, you know, blah, 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 and I'll get through all these pictures, including the most recent experiment, because it's cool, and we're getting ready that we're going to make, you know, the first production battery. Well, the first experimental playing, it's going to work really well, production battery, because I learned a lot, and I'll share it with you.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, what goes on in the woods? Here's a, you know, bear cam. You know, this one tree they have up in the woods. I'm just showing it to the video audience. And that, man, this charming pine tree or whatever, it's only about a foot in diameter, if that. And there are four bears just back scratching, going crazy on this thing. Somebody sprayed that with something. I mean, damn. I've been up in the woods before, and you can see where the bears start back scratching. There's this one that had a big knot, probably like 3 feet around on this big tree, just a knot, you know, this big thing, and it was just wore down. They had bears, they were scratching on that like you wouldn't be. Anyway, I thought I'd share that. Okay, now, there's while we're watching that, there's another a story coming out. Trouble with clean energy disinformation in the mainstream media. And, you know, it's like you go into them for science advice, seriously. According to Fox Business reporter Shibani Joshi, renewables are successful in Germany and not in the U.S. because Germany has got a lot more sun than we do. You know, seriously. You know, actually, Germany gets only about as much annual sun as Seattle or Alaska. Its sunniest region gets less sun than almost anywhere in the lower 48 states. You know, and it's just, you know, this is, you know, just, you know, why are you going to them? You know, why do you listen to these guys? I mean, what's the surveys that they do? They say that, you know, if you listen to Fox News, you have less information about the news. You know, I am so shocked. Okay, so let's go ahead and go back to the slideshow. I promise I'll get you through this. All right. The battery thing. Kiln posts that have a catalyst. Now, a lot of my time is spent on formulating the catalyst. I got all kinds of equipment and stuff I'll show you here in a little bit, but it's all to get down to the right liquid because putting it in a tube furnace and heating it with the right gases, the right temperature, everything, you know, that there's devices that make that relatively simple. The problem is that it's the catalyst. It all starts with the catalyst. So that's, you know, what I spend a lot of my time on. Then I take that kiln post and I put it in this horizontal 2-inch tube that goes in a ceramic furnace. You know, it's like a kiln furnace that is under a controlled environment. Now, these compression rings, you'll see, they're like, you know, this high-temperature silicon ring, like an O-ring. It goes around the outside of the glass tube, and it has a band with a kind of an angle on it, and you Allen wrench these two flanges together, and you squish it, and that gets the seal. I was wondering how they do that. How do I get, you know, open up the ends and put gases and samples and everything in this tube and then seal it? Now, how does that happen? Well, you know, that's how you do it. So then here's a little tube furnace. This thing's a couple $1,000 new, and it's, you know, it's not free, but it, you know, I remember to do this 10, 15, 20 years ago was like $1 trillion if you could even find it. So it's just, you know, technology and manufacturing and robots and China. Chinese, very good friends. We, you know, can, you know, buy these furnaces, and it's called the GSL 1100X, blah, 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 doesn't matter. Okay. So we do this, we put that in there, and you can see these two black cylinders, they're ceramic cylinders that go inside after the sample in the middle, and it kind of blocks the heat and keeps it inside the center of it so all that heat doesn't come out and like melt the metal and stuff on the outside. It does get hot. I mean, it gets hot, 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 hot. That's why you're using ceramics and stuff. So then I push that back in there. All right, now it's time to seal it. Now, the ends, you can see how when you press these together, it creates a seal that's airtight, and I can run my gases, and those of you who see it, you can see it, it doesn't matter. So I get this, the experiment all right, now I'm ready to go. Now, the gases that I have coming in on the right, and I got, you know, different valves and pressure, and I keep track of this, what's the back pressure on this, and how much gas and the flow rate, and all that kind of crap. Now, the flow rate thing, there's a machine. It's digital. I could just put it, it detects, you know, I tell it what kind of gases is in there. I want a certain atmosphere. I do that. Oh, yeah, we can do that. That's $12,000. I go, you know what? I can do it by manual by myself. You know, later when I start getting all funky, maybe I'll do that. Now, here's the gas. Now, you can see what I've done is you have the far large brown tank there. That's argon. The one on the right's helium. Then I have carbon dioxide and acetylene, which is C2H2. Now, carbon, hydrogen. Now, I need carbon monoxide. I got to get another tank. But every time I get another tank and I put it in, you buy more regulators, it's like money. You know, so I figured out acetylene and helium is my best production. If I want to kind of clean out stuff, I would use the carbon dioxide and the argon. And, you know, different combinations do different things. So it goes, you'll see the line goes in behind that board. I have a board to where I put, and the other side. This is their oxygen flow meters. If you go to the hospital and you'll see that they have this, you know, the little ball bearing that goes up in this glass tube that's probably 6 inches high and a little green knob, black with the green front on it. And I control that knob and it gives me the airflow that come from the regulators. I put it only like 7-10 pounds. I mean, it may have a gazillion pounds behind it, but you have a regulator so that you don't have the gas coming out and blow off all your connections and so on, because they're just, you know, like snap on stuff that I use. So it comes in and I get the airflow dialed in to what, and I mark on a piece of paper, you know, or something, or my laptop, and I say, okay, on this experiment number 5 gazillion, I'm going to have this flow, this flow, this one. I get the right combination. It's kind of, you know, this much and this much on these dials, and because it said. Now, because it is metered for oxygen and I use something like a different density of helium, you know, is it going to be so many liters per minute, you know, that it says on there? No, it's a different density. So I have no idea. I just know it's that much. Well, how much is that? I don't know. I'll test it later someday if I give a crap and kind of, you know, what did I cost money and stuff. We're just playing. We're experimenting. I'm not going to let that be a hurdle. Everybody's like, well, how much do you, and how do you know? And I go, I don't. You know, nobody else will be able to replicate this. You know, this is my secret. You want to know a copyright or patent? Try and figure out what I did. Only I know, you know, that kind of thing. So we can get all detailed later. I don't care. Because it was a proof of concept thing. I've already done that. I did that like almost a year ago. Now it's just refining. So now I go, okay, the flow meter on the left is the acetylene, and on the right is the inert gas, whatever I happen to put in there. So I have the carbon source on the left. I have the inert gas field on the right. And then they mix, you know, down here, and go into the furnace. Now, the furnace I set, you got various different temperatures that I, you know, put for different durations. You get like 30 different segments in time that you can do different temperatures, and you want the build up, go down. You know, that's a whole nother variable, too. Now, what I found is probably the clean, if I go to about 735 degrees Celsius, man, you're a carbon-making SOB. But you have hydrogen and carbon, which makes what? Hydrocarbons. At different temperatures in different parts of the tube, you're making diesel, you know, gasoline, kerosene, whatever, you know, freaking, you know, combination of hydrogen and carbon to make a hydrocarbon, you'd get all kinds of different kind of fuels. That's what, you know, a processing refining plant is. They're taking hydrocarbons and cracking the molecule and doing certain, you make plastics. And all, I mean, all kinds of crap comes out at the end of this thing. So I got to get it dialed in to where I'm just having this sludge. You know, what I really want is to suspend the carbon by itself to get the element, the atom of carbon, and have it reassemble on the catalyst in a certain way. So it's about 740 to 765 degrees Celsius that gives me the best combination for what I'm doing. Now, here are some of the base chemicals that I prepared, you know, and start to mix them in this beaker. Here's the iron precipitate. Here's the nickel and cobalt mix. And I put it in there, kind of mix it at a certain ratio to give me the best smear on my ceramic kiln post. Okay? And then that's, you know, what we're doing. I'll tell you more when we come back.
Imagine someone in your community getting in their car, turning on the radio, and hearing the Liberty Radio Network. You can make that vision a reality with your own micro radio station. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how you can put our programs on the air in your area. You can have lrn.fm running around the clock, and you can even add in your own local shows. Building a radio station is simple, but programming isn't. That's where lrn.fm comes in. Learn more at broadcast.lrn.fm. That's broadcast.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
I see trees of green, red roses.
I just like this song. I'm going camping.
Blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
You know, you just saw me, if you're watching the video, you just saw me drink my breakfast. I mean, that's it. I get the big, giant green juice and kind of, boom, done. Done. You know, it goes, and I feel a lot better. I was missing it, too. We've been doing a lot the last few weeks, and I texted Donna from, I was in New Albuquerque at the Tesla Tech thing, and I said, man, go start stocking up on some vegetables, because, man, I need to, my knees started creaking again, that old man thing. You know, a day and a half, and all of a sudden the creek went away. You know, I'm going, man, this juice thing rocks. I'm looking forward to growing, getting the Aquadome thing rock and rolling and whatnot, because it saves us a lot of money. And you just go out there and just, you know, let me tell you how fresh it is. Snap, you know, I just killed my kale. Put it in. Ooh, and I get more. Ooh, I'm not sure how great and wonderful coffee is. I'm not perfect. Okay. The let's go ahead and go back. Okay. We'll go back to the battery project. Damn it! I know you guys are like, you know, kind of Ernie skip to the end. Okay, so we go ahead and we coat the ceramic kiln posts. You know, it's like these inch square cylinders things, and I put it inside the tube furnace, and we heat it up, and we got the gases going in, and the gases get up to a certain temperature, and it breaks the bond between the carbon and the hydrogen. The carbon reassembles into hopefully the nanotubes, and I got, you know, gas flow meters I made from oxygen flow valves, you know, that you use at hospitals and so on. I get the temperature just right inside the furnace, and I get the right mixture of the different kind of catalysts that I do and play with, and five gazillion different experiments on a whole bunch of different slides and quartz boats that you have to have the special kind of glass to do, because if you don't, it messes up the kind of, you know, stuff. All right? Ordering, get your chemicals from Estonia, because you can't do it from America. Get your beakers done. You get on the DEA watch list. You must be a meth lab, because you got distilled kind of like glassware and stuff and all these chemicals. Damn, he's domestic terrorist. Go kill his toy poodle. How about not? All right. So we mix that. We do it kind of there. Now, another workstation I had, there's probably like four or five different workstations. Now, this one is where I analyze and weigh and prepare and lot in the clean area that I have, you know, the microscope and all that kind of stuff, that I use this to examine what I've created, and it's kind of on the other side of the room, and, you know, I need like a white lab coat area. So I go through here, and I start, and you'll see a lot of those bins and those trays that, you know, let's just go to Harbor Freight and you get these little plastic trays that you can put into a carrier. Those are my samples. Now, these are the things that I have. On one side is the glass and the slides and the quartz boats that I prepare my catalyst. I'll do a whole bunch of different experiments, kind of label them and mark them and etch them and where I know where, you know, I got what. And I put them in, then they come out, and then I take some of my more successful ones and mark them and say, okay, this one does this, and this creates that, and this is what I need. All right, so I do that. So that's where I do that. Now, I've created, it was a washout station for silk screen. Okay, imagine this. You have like a, you know, a sink, all right? Well, imagine that sink had sides that went up about 3 feet, a backing that went up, and then a roof atop of it, and then it kind of came down a little bit. And inside there, you would take a hose when you do silk screen frames for making T-shirts. How that works is you spread an emulsion over the screen, okay? Now, I have some pictures of Keith Cernick making some It's Not My Debt baby shirts, and we'll show that later. Now, what happened was, on that screen, you'll have this emulsion that's light sensitive and it's dry. When you take an overhead projector kind of thing, it's like, you know, when you do the old school overhead projector and it has like a black image, you know, it light one go through it and it'll show up on, you know, as a codalith, you know, like a black and white image up on the screen. If I lay that on that emulsion and expose it to light, where the light hit, it'll harden. Where it doesn't hit, it's still soft and water soluble. So I take it over to a sink, and it's like a little spray nozzle you have on your sink at home or something. You just wash it out, and that image that you have where the light didn't hit washes out, and it's open screen. Now, depending on the density of the screen is how much ink will go through, and you squeegee it through, and that's how you do silk screening. That's all that's going on, is that they burn this emulsion, and it hardens where the light hit, it washes out where it doesn't, and that's how you get an image in silk screening. It's that simple, and we do it all the time. Now, the washout station, you know, we've got when we bought, you know, a plate making a bunch of other stuff from, you know, a place that used to do our stuff. They were selling it and asked if we wanted it. So I go, yeah, I want it, but we, you know, found a guy that kind of does it really cheap and, you know, one less thing we got to do. So what we did is I go, wow, man, this washout station would make a great vented hood. So we put a vent in the top, like a dryer vent, you know, like you see coming out when you have your dryer go outside. And we put that dryer vent in the top. We had the metal ducting that went into the wall of my barn, now where a cooler would come in. We put this plywood square up there, about 2 foot square. Ran it through that with a motor on the other side because I was hoping I needed the motor in case it arced. I didn't want it inside because I'm venting hydrogen. So if a little spark from the motor or something go boom, and I'd, you know, rather not. All right. So we did that. So we put that out, vented outside. So I vent, you know, the gases because Lord knows what's coming out of this tube furnace. You know, that's how a lot of these experimenters and scientists died, was from some inhalation of God knows what. So we just, you know, vented outside and now got to worry about it. And it's really mostly just hydrogen. So I go, all right, which I could capture another time and do. That's a whole other thing. So it goes out there, and but it also vents inside this screen washout thing that I use as a vented hood. And the reason is because when you use hydrochloric acid to get the atoms to come up, I put a piece of nickel in. I get some pure nickel. I put it in there, hydrochloric acid. I get atoms of nickel suspended, and it turns it kind of this green emerald color. Well, I want those atoms, all right? Now, I want to also get some cobalt atoms, and I want some iron atoms, but I may not want to mix the iron, cobalt, nickel at the same time, do that later when I put the catalyst on the ceramic, blah, 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 blah. But I need to distill it down. So what I do is what you're seeing here is a heat and stirrer plate. Let me show you. This has, if I put a little magnet in the bottom of that beaker and I turn this on, a magnet spins underneath, so it kind of stirs it if I need to. Then it has, that plate is adjustable how hot it is. I also have a stand, I can do different things. So what I'm doing is I'm kind of blowing off the hydrochloric acid into that vent outside so nobody dies. And I get the concentrate. That is part of the process by which I make my catalyst. But you do this kind of stuff and have this capacity. That's why you got to call the man and say, don't come kill my dog. I'm just making batteries, man. You don't want to hurt me.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
More than I thought I would. It was fun. George Clooney did a good job in that. You know, this was
born in Crane, the place where he was born in Crane.
All right, that's enough of that. All right, now what I'm going to go ahead and I'll walk you through this. I want to make sure you guys get a full dose here. All right, now as I'm doing the concentration of the catalyst here, I can't tell you how many experiments, me messing around doing this catalyst thing. You know, that is the secret, this whole freaking thing. So anyway, so I do that. You know, the man's going to come for that one. All right. And he's, yeah, makes sense of my notes. Yeah, go ahead. Heck, I can't even. But, you know, we kind of get the base idea. I get a feel for it. It's like original discovery. I wanted to do it this way because I didn't have the, you know, the precision equipment that you, I mean, if you can't, you know, make it go whir easily and such, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I just need to get in the ballpark. I'm always about going in the right direction. Do I head east or do I head west? If I can just keep heading, okay, where's the next horizon? Okay, it's over there. All right, you wait till the next morning, the sun starts coming. Okay, you start traveling that way. You go, if you stopped and just kind of chilled, let the sun kind of go back over, wait for it to come around again, and you see the glow. Okay, it's definitely that way, and you head that way. All right, and then he's got you start, the sun's up, kind of doing distractions, and you have all this other kind of going, and then the sun's up, which way is east? I'm not really sure. Wait, just wait. Just wait, it'll come up. You know, okay, it's that way. I just keep going. Plant the flag out on the horizon. And if I know I just keep going that way, I'll get there. I got time. I'm patient. I've learned this with age. You know, chill. It's time to, that's what they say. You know, stop. You know, you get lost. You'll just stop and think. Observe, plan. That's STOP. Stop, think, observe, plan. Stop. Think, observe, plan. Stop, think, observe, plan. I mean, this. So I'm like, I'm letting it happen naturally. Now that's how I, just how I roll. I've learned just cause. All right. So now what I'm showing here is it's called ProPlater. It's a, you know, it's just a glorified battery charger. You know, it allows me to adjust volts and amps to give me, you know, the electrical charge that I would use to plate stuff. Okay, and this comes in here in a little bit, and you'll see why. Now, here's a bunch of different leads that come off of that, different kinds of whatever to plate the carbon. Now, this was one of the original first experiments that I did. That you'll see that's a kiln post that I cut one of the sides off to create a U. I thought I'd get more surface area that way, and I probably did, but I created more problems for myself than I really anticipated. Now, you'll see the copper that connects to the battery, the positive terminal up here. This copper goes in and it bolts the little holes here because this is conductive now. It's got the carbon on it, then it's plated with the nickel, and all of a sudden this ceramic is now more conductive than if it was solid copper. So I'm going, okay. But when I plated this, and I'll show you the next picture, in this jig that I created, this plate is nickel, okay? Now I had this, now this rod here is L-bent. This rod is pure nickel also. Now, this ceramic I put inside. Now, this would be a green solution. These are all pure nickel ingots. I just threw them in there to store it because I didn't know where all my nickel is. So I go ahead and put this rod where it went. It's just right in the middle of this channel here. And this is on the outside because nickel only plate like line of sight, you know, straight across. So I'm going, it's, So I put it in there and I go bzzz and turn that bad boy on and apply the charge right here to this copper lead. The mistake that I made that screwed up my whole thing, and I didn't even notice till later, and this started turning green on here. You see this green? It was copper contamination from here onto the nickel plate. That right there. You know, because I'm dumb, all right? So I go, wow, man, oh, I can tell it worked. The battery worked, it kicked butt, and then it started to degrade. I'm like, why? It shouldn't do that. I mean, it's, and then a friend of mine, Dean, came over and he said, he goes, well, you got copper contamination here. Look at the green. I'm going, it just started to turn green later and getting oxidized. And I go, Ernie, you moron. Now, you see how thick this post here of the nickel is. Well, that's what it was before. There's another one right there. See, it's just like half the diameter. It just transfers from here, and here you see the holes in this plate here and so on. It just eats it out and transfers it onto here. So I'm like, okay. So lesson learned. Now what we're going to do, instead of having a U-shape, I'm just going to keep it in the full square, and I'm going to put it vertically into an iron tube. Now we'll go about that later. I'll show you more close up later what that means. Now, here, you'll see on the left side this tube, this clean glass. This is a fresh tube that I had here because I had broken another one because I had different kind of glass in one of my slides that I did that melted inside here. Regular glass will melt. And I didn't think it was that kind of glass that would melt, at whatever. Anyway, it melted, and then it adhered to the side. And when this cooled and it changed density, it shrunk, it cracked the glass, and it broke and whatever. So I had to get a new one of these. Now, my test one is about half the diameter of this. You see this blackened stuff starting to form at the end. This is the carbon and hydrocarbons that are created, that this is like, you know, a sludge or a diesel or whatever, and you got to dial it in just right so that this does not happen in the test area back here. And if I get this clear here and it just kind of does this little bit at the end, well, then that means I got about dialed in. You know, I'm doing okay. I get, you know, if I can get this a little bit at the end, just a little bit of this, you know, hydrocarbon sludge at the very end of the experiment, then it looks like I'm doing better. So that's not that bad. Now I'm ready to take it out. Here is the sample. This is what happens at ceramic kiln pulls. You'll see it looks like black velvet all over it. I mean, it just, and it's very, 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 very porous. I mean, there is a lot of surface area there. I turned in, I don't know, maybe a square foot into, you know, like acres of surface area. That is the point. Now, because this is super conductive, I don't know, super conductive, but it's more conductive than copper, I can tell you that. Now that this is very conductive, I can plate nickel onto this. And now you're seeing the reason of my madness. So you look at it, you see this fuzzy up here? Oh, that's nice and fuzzy. Oh, that's what I want. Now that becomes my anode. I take and I put that in with the plate. The plating machine, and I'm going to create a vertical plating tank. And I put it down in there and have, without the copper leads, just connect the alligator clips, you know, probably simplest thing, up top.
and then immerse this, and maybe not where it won't touch the alligator. I got to keep the contamination out, and I got pure nickel solution that I put down in there, and then this will start to plate at an atomic level of individual nickel atoms to the carbon. And hopefully there's a bunch of nanotubes, and that's why I need the electron microscope to be able to make sure I'm getting the right. But regardless, it's very furry, velvety, lots of surface area, which is the point. The more I'm closer I can get to the nanotubes, the better this will work. But this is proof of concept. So I've already proved that it works. It's just I had it copper contaminated, and it started to degrade. And I go, no. They're not supposed to degrade. What did I do? Oh, I see what I did wrong. You moron. All right. But I've learned a lot in the process. So we're making this as part, and then the iron will be a cylinder that will go around this really close. There will be tight tolerances that we'll have around that. Now, we also used to do iron oxide around the outside, and they do it in a mesh. You know, it's a, you know, that, you know, be like a paper mesh that gives you an enormous surface area of the iron oxide that we make by taking a bunch of steel wool and putting it in hydrochloric acid. And it just dissolves, and then you filter it out, and you get this red rust, blah, 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 blah. So you can see what the idea is. And it already works. It's just how much it works, how much better I can make it. And then we're going to charge this with a Bedini motor. So it's Tesla Tech along with Edison Tech.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Hello. Yo, because I, you know, these freaking Pork Fest 10 coffee cups are too freaking big. I mean, look at this. I'm, you know, that's a big-ass cup. And, you know, I get a whole bunch of, you know, caffeine, man, you get caffeine Ernie. That's just what happens. That's bad. Okay, now let's just finish up on the battery thing, and I'll show you. This is a tall, black, velvety cylinder. That's all that is. But it has enormous surface. So you always hear when they say, carbon, charcoal activated carbon filter, you know, acres of surface area to filter your filthy, stinking water and get our thing and we're better cuz. You know, well, it's because of the surface area. How much can I make black, velvety, conductive carbon, and then in all the itty-bitty living spaces, I can take individual nickel atoms and put them in all the itty-bitty spaces. Does that give me more surface area than just a nickel plate? Yes! Duh! Do I need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out? How do I do it? I figured out a way to do this. Okay, so then what? All right, well, you know, then let's charge the bad boy up. We've done that before. It works. You know, that's good. One thing we didn't do, there is a certain kind, you know, this is a claim. I mean, it's all I did this Tesla Tech thing. That's why I was interested in going there. They are of the opinion that Tesla created, you know, it's a different kind of energy. Now, it's radiant energy. You know, it's the electricity, it's not, you know, it's kind of different. You know, it's kind of whatever. Cool. So I've already charged this with the regular. I'm going to make two of these. I got two more batteries. I'm going to upgrade and, yeah, we'll do that. A little bit different design just to refine it. I just want proof of concept. Now that I got that, I'll start refining it and see. And all of a sudden I'll go, damn, make me, you know, 12 of them. I'm going to put them over there. I'm going to charge mine, do mine, got mine, whatever. We're going to take the Hope system up to the Jackalope Freedom Festival, and I talked to Steve, the guy that owns a company, H2OPE System.com, I think. Just do Hope, H2OPE. It stands for water, purification, and energy. So, you know, the whole thing, I got a water pump, water purification, electrical power inverter kind of doing thing. You know, I'm just going to take it with me, and I'm the water guy and the power guy. He, you know, he wrote. So I think I'm going to go ahead, and I might just leave my job. I even got it loaded on my big generator because I hear some of the other guys are going to bring generators, so they probably don't need mine. So I'll just bring the Hope system. And you have a station out there sitting in the field, you know, and everybody just plug in all that. That's a big thing. How do I plug in my cell phone? And it's always going to run generators to plug in my cell phone. I start my car, do my cell phone. I'm going to have the freaking cell phone charging SOB, a little electronic guy out in the field that's over there. Knock, 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 knock. Thanks to the Hope system. Yeah, you get a Hope system, you're the hero, and you're going camping and bugging out. You know what I mean? So that's one thing I asked him, you mind if I take it? He goes, oh, please go, man. Become one with your system. I'm like, all right, fine. That's what we're going to do. So if I had a battery in there that's, you know, charges really fast, you know, can discharge really fast, heck, you know, I'm going to put it in a freaking car, man. Tesla, move over. So that's what we're doing here. So go ahead and take a look at this, and you can see, those of you that go to the video, we're going from this here, this kiln post, you know, that right there, to that. That's it. That's all I wanted to do. It's just you got to go through a lot of crap to do it, all right? So I got all this surface area. I plate it doing this. And I get, you know, the plating, you know, with something like it, but I'm going to do it vertical, you know, so that I don't have to get down, whatever. It'll be vertical and all around. We won't have the channel, the U-channel in there anymore and do that. Okay. So now that I got the kind of the fuzzies and I'm doing that plating, there was a technology that Tesla was developing, doing, and got, you know, squashed and forgotten and whatever, and now it's quit it, and I don't care. But if I can use that energy for the initial charge of this thing, that's why I got some of these other guys excited, is we're going to go in, I'm going to give them the battery and say, okay, you guys charge it, and we'll see what happens. Because I can. Now, they have, you know, I was showing, maybe I can show it on my lab table. It's a, here we go, right there. Okay. Those of you that can see this little elevated station right there, that little device right there, is it's about four inches square. And all it is a heat sink, and it is a battery load tester. It's a discharge. It has two leads that comes out. I put on the battery after I charge it, and then it has a fire wire that comes out and goes into a laptop. And it drains your battery, and it gives you a reading. It shows you how many amp hours for how long. And the thing that was interesting, and on a cell, you know, like you have a 12-volt battery, and you got, you know, six, it's like 2 volts per cell. You know, they're, you know, little batteries. And, you know, antennas just all put in one thing. If I have a nickel iron, they're always 1.28 or 1.3 volts, something like that, that comes out. No matter how big it is, big, small, it's 1 point whatever volts. It's how many amp hours. It's how much energy is stored in it. Now, how many volts you get at, it's how many amps you get in. When I put this up, it goes 1.23, and it holds a really good plateau. Now, some batteries kind of go down at an angle. They'll come out, you know, it starts at high, and then it kind of does this thing. Well, the nickel iron goes, whoop, I'm up here. It goes, and then boom, it just drops off. So I'm like, all right, cool. So then you set, and you know how much energy density was in there. That's what this device does. We've already gone through this stuff. You know, I created my battery like, you know, God, 9 months ago. You know, it was like October, November last year. I'm going, it works, yay! Okay, I didn't take that long. I rock and rolled on this thing, get a... It's the catalyst. It's to get the right kind of carbon. Then I got to check the carbon. Then I get busy with other stuff, and then it starts getting hot and thermonuclear out there. But I just started doing a bunch more experiments again because I know it's going to start getting cooler pretty quick, and we're cleaning up out there. And because of the Tesla Tech guys, they want to have a extraordinary energy kind of doing fun, we want to use your barn meetup meetings. All right. You guys put it on. You guys do it. You have them come. We'll, you know, once a month we'll have evening and explain whatever new tech, anybody that's interested, and kind of what do you got, and show and tell and do it. And then the next one we'll do a different one, a different one, a different one. And we're going to combine these two because this nickel iron technology was Thomas Edison's version of, it's instead of a lead acid, you know, battery and acid, this is more alkaline. You know, it's a base. So we go, all right. And I gave my speech and I said, you know, acid and pH, like pH was anything else, I misspoke, whatever, doesn't matter. So what we're going to do is take and marry a modern version of 100-plus-year-old technology, because we can. That's it. Grins and giggles. Now, this is all inspiration for what? Generation Next. I go through this right here, and I just, you know, and we continue it, and I make a nice, cool battery case. I got that PVC battery case. It looks kind of cool. And then, you know, I could, you know, funky paint it and put logos on it and change, you know, and we'll get all kind of sexy cool and start with the, you know, YouTube videos and everything. But, you know, I could have gone through more, and, you know, I got the cameras out there, got the lights, got, you know, I got the Doc Brown lab coat and wig and, do it up. But we needed to have to where we get the process from beginning to end. I just, you know, took some photographs. I will do video. But when we have it perfected and down at least enough to where, you know, we can show and not show every single freaking mistake. But we do this in, you know, 5-minute videos, a few of them, so that we can keep defending Archimedes interested. What is the goal here? Is to inspire Generation Junior High. See my point? Tell me this isn't cool. Then you start putting in, you know, a lot of the stuff I talk about, you know, like space exploration, different new technologies and energy and electronics and software and hardware and yada, 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 you know, and then we start having our meetups and doing. That is what's going to create the culture change. That's what we're looking to do. That's what the inspiration. That is the power, you know, and then we go to the Aquadome. When we come back in the next hour, I'm going to show you some of the, Jonathan, it's his father, our intern just coming in. Wow, you just got up, huh? Damn, partay. Anyway, so we're going to go ahead, you know, have him involved. I don't think he realizes how cool his father's aquaponic thing is. I mean, to him, it's just like, yeah, his dad out there, you know, playing with plants. But it really, really, I'll show you some photos. You'll see how simple it is and how much he's producing. He just got started. So he's helping us get some things going while we're still construction so we don't get behind. So this is, I'll show you some pictures when we come back, you know, close up of that and the different media. And he has a lot of things going on that you will benefit from. So come back in the third hour. You won't know.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Fish Stealers! Fish Stealers! You know, we had Brian Gallagher doing the aquaponics, and what happened was he goes, man, I went out, they took like half, somebody comes, they stole my fish. Maybe it was a big cat, you know, maybe not. Well, the thing is that, well, at least, you know, you have fish worth stealing, so I'm not really sure why. I guess they're hungry, you know, they saw food over there, they went and, you know, got them, you know, food be happening. They did the golem thing, you know, they're sitting there eating raw fish. Okay, Lord of the Rings. Now, let me go ahead and show you what's going on. Here we go. This is Bob Anderson, and, you know, Tonopah Bob, you know, the nuclear power plant fuel supervising whatever lives out off-grid 10-year guy. Well, he's going to be doing an aquaponics thing, and I said, as we're building ours and so on, I go, you really should go look at Brian's. I called Brian, and I said, hey, can we stop by yesterday and just take a look? I'll take some pictures, we'll put it in the magazine, you know, kind of talk about it. And you can see he inherited this. You know, these are, you see, it's the bottom, you know, and the top of what they call an IBT, International Bulk Transport. And that is, you know, it transports water. Well, what we did is we go, all right, this is clear. He painted everything black. Now, his whole thing was he doesn't want algae. See, I keep saying, you know, the fish feed on the algae. Well, tilapia, not necessarily. There are other fish that do, like, you know, the catfish and some other fish and all that kind of stuff. But they really try and stay away from the algae. You know, now certain areas that we want to do the algae for the biodiesel, but the fish, they really feed on the duckweed that kind of, you know, cleans the water and other stuff. You can give them fish food or, you know, whatever. So I go, okay, so in his system, he'd rather not have the algae because the algae, you know, creates all kinds of clog and other problems. And that's why the water that comes into these growing trays, these are the end of the pipe goes underneath the medium, which means it's under the surface of the gravel, so it doesn't see light. So he's really trying to keep light away from everything but the plants. And I'm going, okay, so that's, you know, how he's doing this. So I said, Bob, let's go look at it because he has a simple thing here, and it works really well. I'm going to show you what's called a bell siphon. And that is, I had to have an understanding of this. You know, and Jonathan and I, you know, he doesn't talk to learn enough from his dad. If I had, you know, my dad was telling me he had and all this kind of stuff, you know, I'll slap him around. You know, but, you know, do you have some more props for your dad now? Come on. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, a little, that's what I thought. Yeah, you're never a prophet in your own land. That's just the way it is. So anyway, so he'll, you know, hopefully get some props to his dad. Now, what we're going to do is I'm going to show you the different kind of medium. In the first tank, he just inherited it from a guy that had it, and he goes, hey, who wants my, I'm moving, I, you know, can't take it where I'm going, who wants to get it? Brian goes, I'll take it. And he just got it going, and all of a sudden, from the time that we went to Albuquerque, got 4 days, it's like one of these trays, it was like twice the size. You know, it had runners going all over, it was just, man, and you can, and we haven't even experimented, this is so new, there are so many different types of plants, you have no idea how well what will work and do. And this is on the side of his yard, open to the front. He didn't even go in the backyard. He just had a, you know, area, well, I get to use the side yard. You know, I guess mom said, nope, not allowed to do it in the back. And so he put it on the side. Well, now everybody's stealing his fish. Okay. So this is just like pea-sized gravel. It's just, you know, various gravel. Now, this is one thing that I think I'm probably going to use is this. And the reason is that I am of the opinion that I want some of the trace minerals and micronutrients and all that kind of stuff that comes in with the earth and rocks. You know, give me some granite. I mean, you know, I just feel more comfortable rather than, you know, something else because I just think I might get something out of there. But they want to be careful. Make sure you rinse it really well. Make sure you don't have limestone in there. Make sure you don't, because then it'll mess up the pH. So pH is, you know, a big deal in this. All right. Now, the next tank he tried, now he's experimenting, so he has pumice. This is, or cinders. They call it cinders up here, and it's a lava rock. So it's, you know, about size of marbles and everything, but it's very porous. And when you pull up the plants by the roots, you know, and you harvest them and everything, you got 15 gazillion, you know, rocks on the roots. It just gets in all the little crannies. Now, that's not a big deal unless you're using a grow bed to transplant. So you probably wouldn't use the cinders to transplant. Now, I'm going to do a whole little segment here on explaining this siphon pump here, how this works. The water comes in a pipe into this grow bed, a 4x4, you know, by a foot deep grow bed, let's say. The water comes in, and it rises till it gets to a stem that's underneath this cap here, until it gets to a certain height, and then the entire thing drains down automatically, you know, using air pressure, without any machinery. It just works. And I go, wow, how, what? So I had to see the YouTube to understand and had the graphics done, and I go, very, very cool and very simple and very can't not work. I mean, I love stuff that, you know, it's like, it, you know, water flows downhill. I mean, you know, it's kind of, how am I going to get this water down this hill? Let me see, you know, let it go downhill. I mean, you know, you can do that, score. So I'm a big fan of that. Now, this is where they're using, he's really starting to, you know, kind of use this one to see how everything grows. You know, we're rock and roll and whatnot. Now, these are the clay, what they call them, expanded clay pellets. And I guess, you know, the clay and they heat them and they expand and they float. I mean, you know, if you were to, you take one of these clay pellets, you throw it in a bucket, it floats. I think pumice floats also. You know, lava rock, you know, experiment when you were a kid. Maybe not. If you're younger, they don't do anything anymore. God, you know, it's amazing to me. All right. So then we have this expanded clay. Now, what you're doing is the fish waste is not what the plants eat. In fact, the fish waste is poisonous to the plant. What happens is the waste, that ammonia, is turned into, there's nitrites and nitrates, and I can't remember which one's which, but you, let's say one of them, okay? One form of nitrogen is, the ammonia is broken down into one form of nitrogen by bacteria. Now, that kind of nitrogen, nitrate, nitrite, I can't remember which one, is broken down by another kind of bacteria. You need both kinds of bacteria. That's why it takes several weeks for your system to get into equilibrium before it actually starts producing. But what we're going to do is we're going to take some of this rock and we're going to seed our system that we have. And bacteria, you put a little in, you know, boom, done. You know, boom shakalaka, you got, you know, cool. So I'll trade out some rock with Brian and put it in our system, and that's it. You know, it'll cut the time in, you know, like a fraction of it, because we already see it, because it'll happen naturally. But we want to go ahead and see. We'll take both kinds of bacteria and put in the system as it circulates without any plants or anything. It just circulates. And what is it doing? The bacteria is breaking down the ammonia from the fish poop. And then the second phase of the nitrogen exchange, you know, is for the fish. I mean, for the plant food. Then we need to clean that water that goes back into with the fish. So there's all kinds of different ways that that happens. So I'm going, okay, so that's really all we're doing. So it's not really fish poop that you're using. It is the fish poop that's feeding the bacteria, that's feeding the other bacteria that feeds the plants, and then you want to clean it to go back. So that's all the system that we, you know, a lot of the time that we spend out there on the system is just getting it, you know, to where, you know, we understand what we're going to do. Now, here's inside the tank where the fish are. And when we come back, I'll show you more about the fish and how they do their job. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. 2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people dying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers, everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too near and your daddy's too sad. Get over it.
You know, finish this up. I'm just like, man, you know, skip to the end. All right, here we go. Now, we have the tanks here. They call them IBTs, International Bulk Transport. I was wondering what the heck you call these big freaking, you know, things. I see them on the side of the road, construction sites. So what the heck is that? All right. So you have the tanks. So you took one of them. Now, imagine you got three of these, and you cut the top and bottom off of two of them, you got four trays. Now you keep another one, and he just cut the top off of that, and he has a tank to put the fish in. This is the cleanest water I ever seen on a tilapia pond and tank. Now, how he does that is he keeps the water kind of shaded. I mean, you still see a lot of light in there and everything, but he takes a direct sun, he wraps it in cardboard, he puts a cover over it and everything. You do water and sun, you get algae. That's just the way it is. Well, he doesn't want to have algae. So I'm going, okay, so he doesn't have to eat for algae. All right. So you can see the fish in there. You know, there's a big fish. And you have the water, these little pumps you see in there. It has a little pump on the top, and it runs off of nothing. And it fills up those tanks about every 15 minutes, and then they automatically bell siphon drain right back into the tank. Okay. So he doesn't have to have that much filtration. You know, this is the difference. It's, you know, kind of, you know, he's a lot of the things that they worry about and balance for and do and work on, he's like, well, I don't have that problem. Why? Let's go take a look. That's what we did. Now, this is the top of the tank. That's all that you get. All those pictures of me sticking a camera down in the top of that thing. That's about an 8-inch wide opening that has a big red cap that goes on it. So that's like an 8-inch cap there. Now, here you have, I'm showing you, those of you that you know are watching the video, is that you have these tanks, these trays have drains. They're just a 3/4-inch PVC like your irrigate in your yard, that when they drain one at a time, they come in. You have these four, one, two, three, four. And they come in and they just drain, when they drain, right back into the fish tank. And then you have these pumps. There's a pump on top, and that's what is up here. That's what goes and fills it. Every 15 minutes, it fills it, then it drains. Okay? So then you're looking at, I mean, the plant, these plants right here, I don't even know what the heck they are, but I tell you, we were gone like 4 days. I came back, they're twice the size. I'm like, wow, man, you got dialed into something, and it's green, and it's between two-story houses, and that's one of the benefits in Arizona. It's so freaking hot. He's got, you know, like it's like 12 foot wide between the houses, and you have them two-story, so they only get maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours of direct sunlight. So even though it's 115 gazillion degrees, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of light, so he's not having to worry about shading. So that worked out for him. So I go ahead and show you, you know, back where, there it is. See, he's between the two houses. So, and you're facing south looking at this. So you can see east-west, you got the sun directly overhead for only, you know, I don't know, a couple hours or something. It's not that bad. So that's why he's benefiting there. Now, here's coming, he has a tomato plant, and you can see it. Here it comes, all these gazillion tomatoes. Now, here in Arizona, you can, if you get enough shade, you know, shade is your big thing, you can grow tomatoes year-round. Now, if you get some kind of, you know, in the coldest months, you get one freeze, and boom, you're screwed. So that's why you have a little greenhouse thing. Aquadome, aquadome, aquadome. Now, this is only about 2 inches around, I think a 2-3-inch pipe. And this is how this bell siphon thing, you know, works. I'm going to go ahead and show this to you, the YouTube, and pull that out, you know, in the next segment. I'll pull that out, and maybe I can pull this up during this segment. We'll see. So here is the setup he has. Just, he took all the stuff from the guy, and he goes, yeah, I can do this. I'll set it up. So you got one, two, three, four trays, and then the fish tank back here. This is it. This is it. You can make it prettier and change and do. And he's like experimenting and working on and doing. It'll make it all pretty. Maybe his wife will let him put it in the backyard. Or he'll make this all pretty up here. He just took this guy, threw it up there, did it. And all of a sudden, he couldn't get it to not grow. You know, he's like, okay, I can do that. All right. There's a fish tank. And you can see out of his front yard out there. You know, he's going out in the street. He's living in a regular subdivision. Nice place up here. There's an overflow, you know, in case it gets too much. Now, up top, you can see it's just in a Tupperware thing, about, you know, a 2x1x1 Tupperware thing. That's where all the pump and inverter, just crap he puts up there. Okay, and he just drops a pump down in here. I mean, this was easy, cheesy, Japanesey, just, you know, freaking, man, I'm not, you know, spending a whole bunch of whatever. And he just did it. Okay. And it's working. Now, he has a little, that's, you know, looking in the side of the bucket and seeing the fish down there, and I was just trying to get a picture of it. There's all his equipment that he needs. It's just a power strip and a, you know, aerator and a pump, and that's it. I mean, he just threw it in this bucket and put a lid on it, and, you know, it's not pretty, okay? We make a lot of pretty, you know, like Bob's the pretty guy, man. He's always got everything all pinned up on the wall and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's how it comes out the side there and where he's got it. Now, this is a little, he's got a little aeration in there, and I don't know if you can see him, but there's little baby tilapia in there that, you know, just kind of as a natural result of just having tilapia, they start making babies, you know? So he's just, then he started finding that one of his Japanese spinach, whatever it was, it had runners going everywhere, and it started growing into the fish tank. It found out, he's like, what the heck? You know, and I had the same thing. I had grass in my lab. It was coming under, you know, little cracks in my barn from outside. I go, where's this grass coming from? It's connected, you know, like 12, 15 feet going outside. I go, man, life is persistent. So he's, and the fish just love that stuff. They just strip it bare. And he's going, wow, okay, well, that's cool, you know. So this is what we're learning. There you might be able to see little bitty fish right there and right there. And he's just putting in this like his little nursery. And that was another thing that they were talking about. They're saying wherever the pumps go, because they're so small, sooner or later they're going to get pumped into a different trays. You know, they're going to be in there to where these trays will have, you know, fish in them. You just want to make sure you get some kind of a, you know, separation. You got a little filter tank or something like that. You all of a sudden you'll find out you got a little nursery of fish in there. And I'm going, okay, okay. So we're like, you know, where do we get the fish? Don't worry about it, man. You know, you'll have plenty of tilapia. And they get big really fast. Now, that's one thing that Greg Tivenin was saying, you know, in Missouri. He went and got two 10-gallon tanks and put it in his home. You know, he has it right there above the sink in his kitchen by the window there. And he has two 10-gallon tanks. He put a few fish in. He goes, oh, man, I don't know what to do with them. They grow like as you're looking at them. And I'm going, wow, this is food, man. Damn. That could change, like, everything. You know, what happens if we're not shipping big, giant, you know, blah, blah, blah food to the villages? What if we're just sending three IBT tanks with some stuff in it? A kit. Like endlessfoodsystems.com that we're working with. See my point? What happens when food is not an issue anymore? Good quality, much better than Walmart food.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hancock, you know, I'm looking for, we saw a siphon pump in action, and it had a really good graph. It explained how it worked. I'm looking for the animation, and I've been trying to find the same one that Jonathan and I were looking at. See if I can find it. All right, here we go. This kind of work. Which one of these? All right, custom animation, how a siphon works. Man, I'm not sure I want to see a siphon. I want to see a siphon pump. Because how these... Oh, yeah, Bell siphon. That's what I got. All right. Let's go ahead and do this. And then start this over. Now, what this is showing is that as you fill the grow bed, you'll have the water comes up. And when it gets to the top... Now, see, here's the water inlet. It's coming up. Once it starts to spill over... You know, there is the drain hole as water comes up, and then it seals it, and it creates a vacuum up top. And once it does that, the pressure outside of the siphon bell, it just drains all the water down to the bottom. Now, let me tell you how this is very helpful. Let's say you got a big tank of water or gasoline or whatever, and you're sitting there sucking on it to try and get the gasoline to come out of the tank or something. Well, you don't really have to do it that way. You know, you got, as it fills it up, you got a water tank, and you have this siphon head on it, you know, that, you know, I'd have to show you. It's hard for me to explain. It's called a Bell siphon. Go look it up. Just do YouTubes on Bell siphon. Imagine this. How would you fill up, say, an open tank? You know, it's like you got a play pool. Okay, think about that. You have a pool, a kiddie pool, and it fills up. And when it gets to the top, all of a sudden, going up, not a drain at the bottom, but a drain at the bottom, you know, but it doesn't drain out. It only drains out. You got this stem that goes up to the top of the water level. And if you put this cap on it in a certain way, it will pull up the water from all the way at the bottom of the pool and drain it and then start filling it up again. And it'll drain the entire pool down to the bottom, the level wherever you have the water coming in to go up into this stem that's there. How do you do that? With air pressure. And it's automatic. You know, I mean, not electronics, not anything. It's just physics, math, and air pressure. Bell siphon. That's what I was looking for, siphon pump, but it's called a Bell siphon, B-E-L-L siphon, S-Y-P-H-O-N. Go look that up, Bell siphon, how it works, Bell siphon or something like that. You see that and you'll go, that's the coolest freaking thing ever. And how you can, because you can't have the water just sitting there in these grow media because it rots the roots. Then I ask, okay, well, they have two of the tanks out here going to be floating beds, kind of like a styrofoam that'll sit on top of the roots, just hanging the water all the time. Oh, yeah? Well, what about them? Okay. I don't know. We got to find out. They say, well, that's different because it's a different kind of plant. You know, blah, 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 and you don't have, and it's free floating, you know, in the bacteria and they have in the water. But if you have a media, you know, kind of like rocks or gravel or dirt or whatever, you just can't have it. You get root rot or something. Okay, fine, whatever. All this stuff that we're learning and we're sharing with you. But one thing you need to understand, Bell siphon, how that works. If you understand that one thing, then you can see how you could just have a continuous low flow. A lot of they're getting up to a 1,000-gallon pump they want to have out here, 1,000-gallon an hour, because they say, I don't know, because we got to, you know, the aquadome is going to produce a lot of food and I need a lot of flow. Because they're looking at this. It's not like a couple of trays. We can put a lot of trays and the hanging vertical aquaponics that this will produce. And I just got from McMaster Carr, C-A-R-R, McMaster Carr, the little eye bolts and a certain kind of nuts and the sleeve things and everything to make the connections that I need to make it look cool out here. And we're going to start, because of the conduit that's made out of the aquadome, I get to build all kinds of cool counters in there and put in sinks and have the drains. I'll go in, I can rinse off my stuff and do and have it all on camera. You know, but you got to keep in mind, man, we're going as fast as we can here and do all the other stuff that we're doing, the magazine, Jackalope, and all this other crap, you know, and it being 110 degrees. You come out here and do 110 degrees and tell me how it is. I mean, it's like you're out there sweating, busting butt, and doing experiment and whatever. And, you know, from the time I walk from my lab in the barn to the time I get to the aquadome, there's a pool in between. You know what I mean? So I got to, like, you know, I jump in the pool on my way to the other one. I come back and jump in the pool on my way to the other place and farm doing stuff. And that's the only way I can get anything done. I just stay in here and life support. Life support. Life support. Okay. So this is what we're learning on. Now, right now, Jonathan is over here doing searching on newspaper printing. Okay, let me tell you what's going on there. We've done hundreds of thousands of actual newsprint newspapers. Now, if we were to go and look at, you know, I bet you could, you go Western Libertarian paper. Western Libertarian is one of the papers that we used to do, and we did, you know, a bunch that you could probably see, you know, how, and you'll go online, you'll see the paper, and you can load up the PDF, and it's kind of how we knew that we could do the e-zine, the magazine. You know, 2 years ago, when we started doing the e-zine, there was no other magazine online. I mean, it was just starting. Wired, Popular Science, Martha Stewart. They were just getting going. They're doing it a different way and kind of, you know, I didn't want to go down there proprietary. It's hosted up on Adobe and you kind of get it through and the mag can charge and they turn it off Kindle crap, okay? And I go, no. I'm just not going to go down that road for a lot of reasons. But the thing is we're one of the first magazines fully formed, integrated into our site. You know, multimedia alternative kind of next, okay? So we were right at the leading edge of this, but one thing that we want to do in northern Arizona, when I was up there speaking, a lot of people came up, hey, man, you know, we listen to you on satellite, we do this, we do that, and we know who in school came to meet you and whatever, and I was surprised. And I'm going, okay. They go, well, we got to, you know, combat the local newspapers because it's the local newspapers here and everything that they control the minds of the people. They discuss what issues are important. They're the ones that kind of drive whatever and all the campaigns and all. There's so much more that people don't know. They think they do because they got their local paper and they're just, you know, controlled by, you know, the same interest of the development of the sustainable love. We rule you people. And I go, you know, we had a big impact 20 years ago doing these newspapers. There's no reason why we can't go back to do that. And that gives Jonathan something to do and work on. And he gets to learn InDesign. He gets to, you know, start to be able to express himself there and be productive. All right, cool. So we're going to get that set up. What happens when you can just design over the time, you get the timeless articles. You want to say everything you ever wanted to know about, fill in the blank. You know, all right, you want to know what's really going on with the central bank. You want to really know what's going on with the economy. Really what's going on with the environment. You really want to know what's going on with the control. We rule you kind of Forest Service, roads of. You can go camping. You can't. You got to have permit, kind of license, grow, whatever, and this, and I want to not die. Okay? You do that, and you put in the local issues of the counties and small communities throughout Arizona. We've done it before. That was what started. We've done it before. Dozens of editions, okay, that we own hundreds of thousands of copies all over the state. We have any that's where our impact first. We bypass the man. We're like, you know, screw you before the internet. Then we got, you know, the internet. Now we're seeing a niche, you know, a niche that we can go in and do the same and promote whatever we want. We can promote the Freedom Summit. We can promote a lot of what we're doing, promote the online magazine, e-zine, the newsletter, the this, that, the email dispatch, our side, this kind of candidates want to advertise with, what, you know, kind of go. But I need to know where to do the printing. That's what Jonathan's working on. So I used to use Payson, you know, small town out there, Payson Roundup. You know, we go do, you know, tens of thousands at a time up there. You know, up to, we've done up to 32 pagers, you know, for, you know, the, and it's not free. But nice, colored, graphic. We got skills. Think of it. We got enough skills to do this? Yes, we do. What will we put in it? Well, that's what all these community leaders and everything that we're working with now, they want to include certain stories and we'll help.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train.
Okay, we're going to have some fun. I just got a call yesterday. You know, Alma and one of the other guys, now I'm going to give out his name, you know, get guys in trouble. Because he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Jackalope what? You know, so the one thing I could see, they were always just wanting to make sure and kind of looking and whatever you might and have and everything. Ooh, the ATV doesn't have the right sticker, $300. They're going to be doing a bunch of over. They have a bunch of guys. They're going to go, we're going to get us some revenue. Okay? So they, so if I can make sure, you know, nobody, no, don't anybody do, you know, anything, it's going to give them a ticket. We can kind of, you know, we can doink the man by just, you know, loving on them and everything. You know, we don't want to get in, you know, anybody having to go fight to what, and you're not going to win. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever. Now, if they start being stupid and starting, you know, patting down and doing want to search and all that, that's, you know, okay, they want to play. So we'll go ahead and do that. Now they called me and left a message. So we're going to go ahead and call them right now, and we'll have some fun with that. All right? There we go. What is it? Okay, you guys be quiet. Shh.
Jason speaking. How can I help you?
I'm sorry. Is this Dave?
No, it's not Dave. It's Jason.
Jason. Maybe that's what it was. Jason, I'm Ernest Hancock. I called. I had the question yesterday about the enforcement on the off-road thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Help me out here. Let me just ask some simple questions, and we'll get a beat on this.
Okay.
As I read the law, it was if a vehicle is traveling on a Forest Service road, okay.
Okay.
One of the, you know, it's marked and got a number road, then you got to have the ticket with the decal and the blah, blah, blah. So if we go up there and I'm just got it on in the camp area, because kind of moving stuff around, doing whatever in camp and went from the fire to campsite, does that qualify? You can give me a ticket.
If you're operating the off-road vehicle, the ATV or UTV or RZR, any of those, you know, those items or dirt bike, if you're riding it and it's on the ground, that is considered operating the vehicle, and you have to follow state law by having the OHV decal sticker and following any state law that says, because there's two types of plates. You have your RV plate and your MC plate. And the difference between those two, the RV plate is title only, and the MC plate is registration only. And
whoa, you lost me already.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going. See, this is the thing. I mean, I'm 52, man. I remember back when, you know, license plate for your freaking motorcycle. Are you kidding me? Okay. So I'm going, all right. So then I start hearing about it in California. My sons go out to the dunes. Well, mm-hmm. all of a sudden they got out in the middle of the freaking Sahara Desert. I mean, literally, it's a Sahara Desert dune yeah. kind of thing. You got them with little lights going, pulling people over. You don't have a license plate in the desert on the dunes. I'm like, are you kidding me? All of a sudden, here it comes to Arizona. I gotta have a license plate to go yeah. dirt bike riding. I'm going, wait, time out. Not only do I got to have a license plate, I then got to get a special decal to go on my license plate to go into the Forest Service kind of thing. I mean, how old are you?
I'm 35.
I mean, you know, heck, you might even remember back in the day, okay?
No, so, I didn't have to have a – I'm from Ohio, so we didn't have to have plates on ours. We just had a little sticker, and it lasted for 5 years.
Yeah, see, that's another thing. I mean, I go get license plate on my trailer. It lasts forever now, or my boat, you know. Yeah. And I do this, you know, this motor vehicle kind of dirt bike, no light kind of dirt. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. All right. So we go through, and I read the law. I go, all right, what kind of freaking messed up law is this? So I read the law, and it says that on, you know, Forest Service roads, I mean, if it's a road. So I'm mm-hmm. going, yeah, but, you know, let me tell you what I already know. I'm going to be standing before the judge. I get my $300 fine, and it says, you were sitting on this in the Forest Service. We rule you $300. And I'm going, yeah, but the law, we don't care what it says. You see my point?
Yeah, well, if it's on a trailer, you're not going to get a ticket. It's not being used.
That was one question that I had.
That's what Game of Fish tells me. You know, if it's on a trailer, we talk about it, but I don't make a big deal of it because you're not using it. It's only when you're using it is when you may.
But if I'm using it, even though it's not on the road, it's just in the campsite, that qualify. You're sitting on that thing and the wheels are on the ground, ticket.
I don't. It's officer discretion.
Discretion. I love discretion with government employees. It's very discretionary.
You know, personally, if it's sitting in your camp, why would I give you a ticket just because you don't have an OFG, you know, decal, whatever?
Oh, you're funny. You know the guys that they, why would they? They do because they can. Because they can, okay?
I work with Nancy, the OHV lady, and I don't think she does that. I think it's only when you're operating it on a road, a dirt road, a pavement, whatever. I think that's the only time they actually do that. I can't say for what the state does, but state law does require a OHV decal. That's what the law says.
No. I understand. And I read the law, and it's like when I'm on the road. But they'll go, you know, well, a car can drive into the campground there, and it goes around, and you have an ATV on where a car is, and we classify that as a road ticket. See my point?
Okay.
That's why I wanted to call and ask you, because I've gone through this stuff before with government employees. They just do whatever the heck they want anyway. And I just want people to know we go up there camping. I know some of them do not have a sticker on this, but they don't really want it to go out traipsing around on the roads and so on. They want to go the back trails where cars can't go, or they just want to use it to move stuff around in the campground or go from mm-hmm. one end to the other. Yeah, I'm going to the bathroom. Bathroom break, $300. You see my point?
Yeah. And, you know, the OHV decal is a state thing. It's not a Forest Service. The state requires that OHV decal because it helps with printing out these Game and Fish brochures about off-road stuff.
Yeah, we need to have trails. The money to tell you that we're going to charge you money if you don't have the ticket so we can get some money.
Yeah, and that was pushed through the Arizona Game and Fish. That's not nothing to do with the Forest Service. A lot of people get it confused.
Okay, now who gives the ticket? Now, see, that's the one thing that was interesting. We just had a story in Northern California where a sheriff stripped the forest rangers of their law enforcement abilities for doing this kind of crap. It just pissed
them
off.
I hear that story. No, they can't. They won't able to write state citations. They only write federal citations.
Okay,
they can't strip a federal officer of their jurisdiction.
Okay, this is my point. You're saying this is a state law.
Mm-hmm.
Can a forest ranger write a ticket for this state law?
Yes, because we actually have
that power be stripped from you?
No, because we have a CFR that simulates state law, so they can't strip that.
Okay, so you have the ability to enforce state law as a federal agent.
Yes.
And you get that authority from where?
From the U.S. magistrate.
Wow.
It's basically a CFR. It's not a state ARS. It's a CFR, Code of Federal Regulations. It simulates that portion of it.
See, what I'm doing, it's interesting, is I go camping over the decades and so on. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing this expansion of, you know, first then we get forest rangers get guns. Then they start being able to write tickets. Then they start enforcing state law with federal jurisdiction of creating state law into a federal thing that they blah, 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 you know, give us the money. And all of a sudden, I'm not getting away from the man going camping anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm going out freaking getting immersed in the man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, the Forest Service always carried weapons way back in 1905. So that never really changed.
Wow.
I know my history. That's why a lot of people don't realize it. But
Service, thanks for all your information. You know, I got to go. But I really appreciate this. So we'll just let, you know, people know it's clear as mud and let them whatever. Okay.
Yeah, you know, just let you know, you know, if you're just going to be driving on pavement, just pavement, not going off on a dirt road, you don't mm-hmm. need an OHV decal.
No, God, but I need a plate. All right.
You do need a plate.
I got to go. Hey, thanks okay. for calling, you know, taking my call.
No problem. If you have any more questions, feel free
you
to
bet.
Call me.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, see, I wanted to get him off before the rejoinder music started. You know, I was like, whoa. Just made it. Okay. So now it's clear as mud. Clear as mud. You know, the thing is that to have an off-road vehicle now, you got to have a license plate. And to take it off-road, you have to have a sticker on the license plate. And if you don't, it's $300. Well, my discretion. I, you know, if it's on the trailer, I'm not going to do it. If it's on the ground, well, maybe I'm not going to. Well, if you're not on the actual road, if you're in the camp, well, I probably wouldn't do it. We can talk about it, but I wouldn't do it. We're going to do it, but they'll do it. You see, because I read the law, it makes it pretty clear. You know, it says wherever a vehicle can go on the roads. Well, is campground, is that a road? You know, what about the back trails where cars can go? Does that count? Well, yeah. Says who? Says whoever has the freaking gun, that's who. Clear as mud. See you next week.